can't tell if the chemistry's good by looking at it. It wasn't clear yesterday. For the last time, the saltwater pool is a chlorine pool.
This is the Talking Pools Podcast with pool pros from every region in the country. If it happens in a pool, you'll hear about it here. Everything from tips and hacks to the latest tricks and trends. Breaking news, we lay it on the line. We tell it like it is because we think you deserve to know.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Thursdays with Wayne with the Talking Pools podcast group. I hope everybody has had a great week. I know I have. The weather's been nice to us here in the Mid-Atlantic area for once. Actually able to mow my lawn for the first time in a long time. It's not really a lawn. It was a jungle, really. But thank goodness for that. And the eclipse was this week, but unfortunately, we really didn't see anything where I am here in Maryland. I had to kind of watch it on TV, on CNN, actually. Some pretty good shots of the total eclipse in Indianapolis and Stowe, Vermont, and I believe the other one was Cleveland. It was kind of cool to watch. I remember total eclipse here, 20, 30 years ago, maybe. It was pretty cool. What we're going to do today, well, since the last podcast I did, the bag of random stuff, I thought I'd do a bag of random stuff number two, because there's a couple different topics I want to talk about. Actually, three that come to mind. Had a good friend of mine over in Australia and New Zealand ask me about, can I talk about calcium phosphate? And I thought, you know, that's probably something really interesting to talk about. What is calcium phosphate? Well, better yet, let's start off from the beginning. What is phosphate?
The mobile WaterLink SpinTouch allows pool and spa professionals the ability to test water in the field. A patented WaterLink Spin reagent disc is used with the innovative photometer to measure 10 different tests in just 60 seconds. That's right, just 60 seconds, and you'll have results displayed simultaneously on the photometer's touchscreen. That's not all. You also have the ability to send the data through Bluetooth into a smartphone or a tablet device. The photometer can measure free chlorine, bromine, total chlorine, combined chlorine, pH, alkalinity, hardness, cyanuric acid, copper, iron, phosphate, borate, biguanide shock, and salt. The water analysis can be proactive since they are able to measure all of these important tests and recommend correct procedures to fix their water chemistry issues when using our WaterLink Solutions Pro software program. It allows pool and spa analysts the best way to achieve precise results. So simple, anyone can use it. This is the most advanced system for precise use of wet chemistry methods ever produced. Pool and spa analysts can achieve precision without time-consuming tests or cleanup procedures. This groundbreaking analysis system is so simple, no vials to fill, no prep time, no guessing. To learn more about this innovative lab, visit www.waterlinkspintouch.com. Again, www.waterlinkspintouch.com.
What is calcium phosphate? Well, better yet, let's start off from the beginning. What is phosphate? Well, phosphates kind of come in three different forms. Not that you really care about any of this, but it's kind of interesting. You have what's called orthophosphate. You have something called metaphosphate. That's sometimes called polyphosphate. And then you have what a lot of people call organic phosphate or organically bound phosphate. And it's the third one that we're really kind of going to concentrate on, because phosphates get into pool water a lot of different ways. And I'm not going to really dive into the whole big-time phosphate issue, but phosphates, the primary source of phosphates in swimming pool or recreational water, let's put it like that, comes from runoff of fertilizer. used in heavily landscaped pools. If you have your lawn chemically treated, it's probably going to have phosphates in it. But they get into the pool water by unscrupulous landscapers. I mean, how many times have you serviced a pool and a landscaper is mowing the lawn and the grass clippings go right in the pool and all you want to do is scream? Again, not kill the person, just scream in anger. But anyhow, that's phosphates get into pool water. And what do phosphates do in pool water? Algae. Or algae in cloudy water. Or it just is, it's a mess. Okay. And how do you remove phosphates? Well, that's easy, relatively easy. Despite what the brand name is, it's all the same chemical. It's something called lanthanum chloride. And what that does is that it actually, when you pour it into the water, again, there's another bonding situation going on, and it attaches itself to the phosphate and then simply removes it so that you can get it going again. And it's a pretty simple treatment. Depending upon your situation, it may be something that's a weekly thing or monthly thing, or every now and then, oh my God, what happened kind of thing. But there is an easy and I won't say inexpensive because it's really not inexpensive at all. But there are many brand names of phosphate removers. You have, Phosphree, Phosbegone, No More Phos, you know, something like that. But again, they all contain lanthanum chloride. And that's the key here. Well, sometimes you can get a thing called calcium phosphate. Well, gee, Mr. Wayne, why does that happen? And when does it happen? And how do I recognize it? Well, I'll answer you, Wayne. Yes, I believe I'm talking to myself. calcium phosphate actually appears as a scale in recreational water. Especially in recreational water where two things are happening. Well, three things are happening. One, there's a phosphate level in your pool greater than 125 parts per billion. Two, the temperature of the water is warm to hot, which means heated pools, spas, hot tubs, things of that nature. And that's two out of the three. The third one is a high calcium level, high calcium carbonate level. And what do I mean as high? You can see this happening anytime your calcium hardness level exceeds, I'd say you probably see it in the 600 part per million plus range. Normally it's the higher ranges. How come the calcium gets so high? Well, I'm not going to get into that. That's a whole nother podcast, but it's there. Okay. So you have to have those three things together that cause the probable formation of calcium phosphate. Because so you've got high calcium level, you've got a warm to hot temperature, and phosphates in the water. Okay. Those three combined together. Well, what does it do? Well, the phosphate actually attaches itself to calcium. And what it will do is cause this really white scaling that's really, really tough to get rid of. I mean, you almost have to chisel it off if you ignore it and just let it kind of grow. It's a pain in the butt. It really is. One of the ways that you can eliminate calcium phosphate in the water is actually, well, of course, drain the water and refill it with fresh, that kind of thing. You know, remove the scale, whatnot. Chemically, what you can do, or chemistry-wise, what you can do is drain the pool or spa partially and refill it with calcium hardness of a much lower level. That will allow most of the calcium to go back into solution. But depends on how strong the bond is between your calcium and the phosphate, and that will depend upon your phosphate level. And three, your phosphate level is high. It's a triple threat, quite honestly. My good friend Terry Arco with HASA wrote a really, really, really good article about calcium phosphate that came out in Pool and Spa News a while ago. You're talking pre-COVID. They kind of talked about this. If you if you Google calcium phosphate and recreational water, you'll find that article. And it was really well written. Terry knows his stuff. And the issue with having it, it's a pretty bad situation. And you really have to let your pool or spa really go unattended for a long time. And like I said earlier, those three situations have to occur in order for calcium phosphate to form. But again, you don't really see it again, and unless the water is very warm, almost hot, a high calcium hardness reading, and a high phosphate reading. Okay. So if you can control or eliminate your phosphate, you're just going to be dealing with a high calcium level, which can be dealt with, you know, either by the dilution and adding with a lower level of calcium in the water, draining, refilling with lower levels, that kind of thing, lowering the temperature if you can, that kind of thing. So there's ways to deal with it, but the problem is it occurring in the first place. So if you've got that triple threat of a high phosphate level greater than 125 parts per billion, a high hardness level, say 600 parts per million plus, and you have warm water temperatures greater than, say, 85 Fahrenheit, which I have no idea what that is, Celsius, off the top of my head. I'm sorry, all my metric friends. I have no idea what it is. They tried to teach us metric in elementary school in the 60s, and it was a big failure. Anyhow, so it's a big problem. It happens. It has to, in certain circumstances, it happens badly, and there are ways to deal with it. Again, Pool and Spa News, Terry Arco wrote the article about calcium phosphate. Very good. If you can do a little research and find that article, that would be great and would be a big bone. But hopefully you don't have to deal with it. But, you know, the Lone Ranger has ridden and the Calvary's here, and there are ways to deal with it if you happen to encounter it. And I'm sorry if you have to. So the next thing I kind of want to touch base on in my random bago stuff part two is I got a couple calls actually earlier this week about alkalinity testing, and I know I've talked about alkalinity before in a number of broadcasts. In fact, I think I even talked about it a little bit in the last one, but a lot of people don't understand alkalinity and what you're dealing with. Remember, there is no such thing as total alkalinity. Okay. There is a thing called alkalinity, total alkalinity, but alkalinity is comprised of a lot of different things. Okay. So you've got bicarbonates, carbonates, sulfates, a number of other minor players, and cyanurates is the big one. That comprise total alkalinity. That's why we in the industry say if you're doing a test for total alkalinity and you have cyanuric acid present in the sample, you need to adjust your total alkalinity reading so that it reads what we call carbonate alkalinity, which is what some people call true alkalinity or accurate alkalinity when you're dealing with water balance and trying to treat for alkalinity, either increasing it or decreasing it. But it's not necessarily the chemistry behind it, but a lot of people tell me that they get confused when they're doing the test for alkalinity. And it's really pretty simple. It's what we call an acid-base titration, okay? So basically, you're getting a sample of water, and you're adding something to the water that will eliminate any halogen in the sample, because halogens will affect an alkalinity test. Remember, halogens are chlorine and bromine and iodine and ozone and some other things that are in that column. But primarily what we're concerned about is chlorine and bromine. Okay, so you've got to eliminate that. So usually test kit manufacturer will tell you to add a little bit of a chlorine neutralizer to the water before you do the test. And what is that chlorine neutralizer? It's sodium thiosulfate, or simply called thiosulfate. And you add a couple drops of that, and then you add your indicator. And your indicator, usually in an acid-based titration for alkalinity, will cause the sample to go green, a really pretty green, like a grass green, talking about grass. And then you add sulfuric acid to the sample. So that's there, this acid-based titration, that's where this comes from, until it goes from that green color to a pretty, I always called it a candy apple red color. This is from my youth in the 60s and hot rods. Candy apple red was the big color. But that's the color you're looking for. And how long it takes to, a number of drops it takes to get to that change, or, you know, if you're using another system, if it turns that color at a certain point, or if you're doing something electronic, it will read it out. It will give you an answer. And again, if you have cyanuric acid in the sample, you have to make an adjustment, and we take a third of your cyanuric acid value and subtract that from your tested total alkalinity value. That gives you your carbonate alkalinity value. Again, not going to beat it to death, but that's what it is. Now, if you don't have any cyanuric acid in the water, you don't need to make the correction, obviously. Okay. Now the problem occurs is when it doesn't go green to red. Does some other screwy stuff. Okay. It'll go blue. It'll go yellow. It'll go blue to yellow. It never goes green. Okay, that kind of thing. So it goes some other color other than the normal green to red in your standard acid-based hydration. What do you do? Well, after you scratch your head and you're going, what the F is going on? Okay. Most test kit manufacturers will tell you how to correct it. And it's pretty simple, because the interference you're seeing is due to a high halogen sanitizer level in the water, high chlorine or high bromine, that's causing that weird color to develop. Okay. And that's high chlorine or bromine causes all sorts of problems with some of the other tests, but with alkalinity, you get that blue color, blue to yellow, just yellow, that kind of thing, maybe green to yellow, that whatever. Okay. So how do you correct it? Well, it's pretty easy. After you get a new sample of water, you're going to double the amount of that chlorine, that halogen neutralizer, the thiosulfate, you're going to double the amount that you would add. So if the test asks or tells you to add two drops initially, you would double it to four. Sometimes you might have to go higher. Adding more thiosulfate will not muck up the test. Okay. So usually four drops, if you're doing the drops, is good enough to take care of it. And then you get your normal green to red color. If you're using a test strip, you're kind of messed up. What you're going to have to do is get a sample of water, add a couple drops of the neutralizer, of the thiosulfate, and then dip the test strip into that now treated sample to get the right color development. But there are ways to get around that. Okay. Again, adding that additional thiosulfate will get rid of that alkalinity interference, which is a pain in the butt, quite honestly. Doesn't happen often, but happens particularly if people are impatient and test their water right after they've shocked it. It happens a lot. So this is why, also as an aside, after you've treated the water with something for whatever particular reason to do something, wait at least one turnover before you retest the water. Make sure you've reached the goal that you're trying to get to. Why do you wait one turnover? Well, you need to have the water circulate through the entire system at least one time. And that's what turnover is. Turnover is the amount of gallons is how long it takes for all the water in your pool or spa to go through the entire filtration system at least one time. Okay. For pools, 6 to 8 hours is usually what you're shooting for. For spas, it really kind of depends on the manufacturer of the spa. Could be as short as 15 minutes, could be as long as 45. Usually 30 minutes is good enough. And then go ahead and test your water. This is true for any kind of chemical treatment, chemical adjustment that you need to make. And the third topic I kind of want to touch base on today actually came up in a discussion I had with a service tech friend of mine down in the St. Pete, Tampa area in Florida. He was asking me questions about hydrogen peroxide and PHMB, polyhexamine biguanide, affectionately known as brand name, Bakwasil. This, by the way, broadcast is no endorsement of any particular product. Bakwasil, like products, are purchased by customers who usually say something like, "I'm allergic to chlorine and bromine. What do you get?" and that kind of thing. Well, Bakwasil was developed, I guess, lack of a better word. It's been around for a while. It just hasn't been very popular to a degree until probably, I'd say, the late 90s. For those people who truly have an allergy to halogens in the water, to chlorine and bromine. Now, historically, you know, when people say, "I'm allergic to chlorine and bromine," they're probably not. They just don't want it in the water for whatever particular reason. There are people who, though, are truly allergic to these chemicals. So you have to be aware of alternatives that are available to them to sanitize and oxidize the water. Well, Bakwasil comes along, and the chemical name for that product is PHMB, polyhexamethylene biguanide, PHMB, and that is the only other product other than chlorine and bromine that's classified by the EPA as a sanitizer. Okay. It is not, however, an oxidizer. Chlorine and bromine are. They do both. Okay. PHMB does not oxidize. That has to be pretty, that's an important statement, an important chemistry statement. It does not oxidize. You need something, some process, some treatment that does both. Sanitizes the water, kills all the nasty germs and bugs and whatnot in there, and oxidize out all the organic material that gets in the pool, the stuff that comes off of our bodies. Okay. So what do? Well, the only product that is compatible with PHMB as far as oxidation is concerned is hydrogen peroxide, H2O2. Now, this is not the same strength hydrogen peroxide that you get in your local drugstore, which is about, you know, 5-ish% hydrogen peroxide. I'm talking hydrogen peroxide that's around 40% strength that you would have to get from a supplier, a chemical supplier. And it's this strength of hydrogen peroxide that's used as an oxidizer with PHMB. So you can give it that 1-2 punch. Now, the problem is you cannot use chlorine as a shock, okay, in a PHMB pool because polyhexamine biguanide is pretty much incompatible with everything. Chemical treatment wise, except for hydrogen peroxide and a couple of other small things. So if you intentionally or unintentionally add chlorine to a PHMB pool, thinking that you can shock that pool using that product, you're going to have problems. Because if you've ever seen the movie The Blob, either the original or the redo back in the 80s, that's what kind of looks like. It forms this gelatinous kind of blobby kind of thing that floats in the water. Sometimes it looks like strings of snot. That's the only way to describe it. And it really does a number to the filtration and the plumbing, and it's just a real pain in the butt. And it happens too often every year. I don't think it's ever going to go away that people think they know what they're doing when they don't. But hydrogen peroxide is the only product you can use. Now, in talking with my friend this morning, he was thinking about trying to work out a system where you automatically add a little bit of hydrogen peroxide to the water all the time, which is probably not a bad idea if you have the time to do something like that. But again, with PHMB, that's the solution to I'm allergic to chlorine or bromine. But again, you have to follow the instructions religiously. You can't just think you know what you're doing. You probably don't. Read the instructions on how to deal with it and treat with it, and use hydrogen peroxide as your shock and oxidizer. Now, the other weird thing about PHMB, and we don't know why this happens, okay? But back in the late 90s when it first came out and it started to become a little popular, a couple of years after it came out, I started getting calls that said, hey, Wayne, I used Bakwasil and I use this kind of products and I follow the instructions, but something's going on with my pool and I don't know what's happening. It just looks cloudy. It doesn't look right. I'm doing everything right. Now, and I know they're doing everything right. You know, what's going on? Well, something happens after a couple years or maybe a little bit longer to the water that in the pool that uses PHMB that it just – It turns the pool water south or spa water south, and not quite sure what's going on chemically. It just kind of – pool gets tired, I think maybe is a good way to describe it. The water gets tired. I know that's terribly chemically oriented, but that's what it does. It kind of stops working, and the only way to get it to work again – or really anything else, is you got to drain the water and flush out all the lines and change out your filter media and all that other stuff, and then refill it with fresh water and start either again with new PHMB or switch over or switch back to chlorine or bromine. And a lot of the manufacturers of the PHMB products even tell you how to convert back from PHMB to chlorine or bromine, because it happens. We're not quite sure. And again, you'd think that some very smart chemist would figure out why this is happening, but I've yet to read anything on it that causes this kind of problem. If you've seen anything, please let me know. Pop me an email to talkingpools@gmail.com and tell me, hey, Wayne, I found this, and send me a link, that kind of thing, and I'll report on it. So PHMB has a purpose. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but it's there and it's available to those people that truly have an issue with halogen-based sanitizers and have a reaction to that. So that's it for today. That's my bag of random stuff number two. I'm sure there'll be a number three and four and stuff down the road. And as I just mentioned, if you have an idea for a topic that you'd like me to address, or want to rant and rave and, you know, shake a finger at me, please go right ahead. Email is talkingpools@gmail.com. And put down in the subject line, attention, Wayne. And then, you know, do the damage. Have at it. Have at me. And I'll be more than happy to discuss it on air. So in the meantime, as always, take care and please be safe out there. And I'll be waiting to hear from you. Take care. Bye-bye.
I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you for listening today. I'm hoping you enjoyed the episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together for you. Listen, it's been a couple of wacky, crazy, screwed up years from pandemic to Poolmageddon. I just want you to know that we are all in this together. If there's anything that we can do for you, send me an email at talkingpools@gmail.com. Again, that's talkingpools@gmail.com. We're here. This is your podcast. We are the Pool People's Podcast, of the pool people, for the pool people, by the pool people's podcast. This one is about you. So thank you for tuning in and listening. Do me a favor, click subscribe before you go. That way you don't miss an episode.